Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end-of-season sale is here, and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals, and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 331. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's going good. I've got some cool weather here, man. And
so, yeah, same.
It's been nice. Going to be like high of 81 all week, low of 60, which I'm very much looking forward to this week. And that's going to be some good feeling baseball. I think I've sweated probably like every game I've been to this year. And I don't think I'm going to sweat this week a game. It's going to be nice. So I'm pretty pumped about that. Fall is upon us and the AFL is almost here, which I'm pretty amped for.
Yeah, it definitely feels like fall in the air up here too. Like today was only like, I think the high was maybe like 67, 68 degrees. And that's where it's been the last few and where it's going to be. We might get some low 70s, but I don't see like any 80 plus on the horizon for us up here in Maine. And yeah, it's been nice. Like going to the Sea Dogs a couple games last week, it was nice and good baseball weather. It was in the 70s last week. And today was gloomy and rainy, but yeah, it's a nice refreshing change of pace because obviously it's not quite as hot up here, but for us, it's been really hot and really humid. So some of those games, even at night, were just like thick air. It was rough, but that's like this time of year. The August, September baseball weather gives you a nice little break from the hot weather, but still got a lot of baseball to go. And we still got another almost quarter of the season, major league season. Obviously, minor league seasons wrap up a little bit sooner than that. And Shohei Ohtani's on a near 50-50 pace now, which I didn't realize.
That's nuts. Yeah.
I knew he was over 30-30, but I didn't realize he was up. So he had his 39th home run today, and he has 37 steals. I thought he was at like 32, 33 steals. He's on a 50-48 pace right now. No one's ever gone 45-45. I think the closest, I mean, obviously Acuna was close last year. Like Soriano was close. I think Canseco got close, but there's never been a 45-45 year, let alone a 50-50 year. If he was to go, man, if he was just to be like, you know what, screw it. I'm going to run a little bit more and go 50-50. That'd just be absolutely insane. Even 45-45 is insane. This is a pitcher. Well, obviously, he's more than a pitcher, but like it's almost like, oh, he wins all the MVP awards when he's doing the two-way thing. It's almost like this is like his, hey, I can be an MVP without pitching to prove it to everybody type of year. It's been absolutely crazy, but more of a minor league show today. We're going to check in early returns on the FYPD guys. So they're starting their professional careers, got a few standouts so far. And obviously it's the Monday episode, so three up, three down with some hot and cold hitting prospects. But before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter, Chris is at Roto Clegg. I am at EricCross04. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, toolshedfantasy.com and thedynastydugout.com. For more work from each of us, go to all of our Dynasty, Prospect, and FYPD rankings. And, of course, check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. Use the code TOOLSHED. Even if you want to use that for a football premium package or basketball, hockey, whatever you want, that code will get you 10% off at checkout. So check out all the great stuff over at rotoballer.com. All right, Chris, let's get into the early FYPD standouts here. And we'll start with one of the biggest bats so far, and Nick Kurtz here, who's been just getting on base at a ridiculous clip. 409, 567, 1,000 slash line so far. In 30 plate appearances, he's got four home runs already, scored 9 runs, driven in 11, 8 walks to just 6 strikeouts, showing off that elite approach that we talked about with Welsh a little bit last week, which was a great episode, by the way. Check that out. Episode 330, went over the Prospect 1 ADP mocks that he puts on. What a great talk in that, so go check that out if you missed it. But, yeah, Kurtz, like, the early returns are everything we could have wanted from Kurtz. And, again, I was questioning last episode, like, when we were going over, like, comparing him and Jack Caglione in terms of, like, ceiling, floor, upside, downside, all of that. I was like, man, I was starting to change my mind. Like, I have Cags ahead right now, but starting to maybe flip that and maybe go Kurtz because I think he's a more complete hitter. He's safer. Obviously, he has the much better approach and maybe doesn't have quite the upside of Jack, but, man, this is a much better all-around hitter, I think. So, off to a great start. I'm surprised he's still in low A right now. I'm surprised they didn't put him into the high A, given how advanced he is. But, yeah, early returns on Kurtz is very good.
Yeah, I agree. It's a pretty dumb assignment, in my opinion, to put him in single A. It's probably worse competition than
faced
in college ball, playing in the ACC. And he's doing exactly what you would expect a Nick Kurtz to do. And, you know, like, we're talking about, like, the skill set of just, it's so safe. And I know it's, like, you can go back and we can talk about, like, the other first basemen that have failed over the years. Spencer Torkelson, Andrew Vaughn. Like, it's such a tough profile because you have to hit. But Kurtz is a significantly better athlete than either of those guys. And I think he's a pretty underrated athlete in this draft class too. He's a bigger frame, 6'5", 235, but excellent athlete here, which does help. This helps the profile a lot. And we're talking about a profile that at Wake Forest, 3 years at Wake Forest, extremely good every year. Like, he never showed any downside. And freshman year, his 15 home runs, 30 extra base hits in 54 games. But he still put up an 1,100 OPS. The sophomore season, 24 home runs in 56 games and a 1,300 OPS. And then this year, obviously, he had another good year. He missed a little bit of time with injuries. 22 home runs in 54 games and a 1,294 OPS. It's just kind of ridiculous. So he ended his college career as a 333 hitter with a 510 OBP, which is pretty spectacular. He played 164 collegiate games, had 61 homers, 35 doubles, and 2 triples. And so here's the thing with Nick Kurtz. Obviously, talking about the run environment in college baseball right now is just kind of crazy. And it's, I think this year more than ever was like a pretty huge outlier as far as exit velocities go, like the run environment and all that sort of stuff. But I do think that while we can talk about those numbers and stuff, we can compare apples to apples, and we can certainly compare what he did, certainly compared to everybody else in this draft class. And you look at the numbers, and Kurtz went toe-to-toe with pretty much everybody in the class from, like, every standpoint you want to look at. The only downside is, like, he's not aggressive in the zone. And, yeah, can he jump back in and be more aggressive? Yeah, I'd rather have somebody learn to swing more than tell them they need to swing less. So I look at this profile, and from an average EV standpoint, it was 98th percentile in the class. The 90th percentile EV, it was 100th percentile. It was up there with, it was the best among the best, like top of the class. Max EV, 98th percentile. His walk rate was just too high. It was 100th percentile for the class at near 30%. It's a little high. Hard hit rate, 82nd percentile. Like all these things that just stand out. And he hits spin really well, which I like. Like when you've got a guy that already has shown he can hit spin and breaking balls coming into pro ball, like that's a pretty huge asset in my opinion. He doesn't chase. It was a sub 14% chase rate last year. He picks up spin extremely well. He chased out of the zone on breaking balls just 10% of the time. The contact rate's really good. It's just strong numbers there. It was a 87% end zone mark. That'll play. I will take my chances here with Kurtz, knowing that the kind of athlete we're looking at for one, the kind of power we're looking at two, the OBP skills. Like, I just feel so good about having Nick Kurtz on my teams over a guy like Caglione, who, while he might be like his 100th percentile or 90th percentile outcome is probably much higher, I'm just more comfortable taking Kurtz at the top, knowing the bus rate's probably a little bit lower with him. And the fact that he's hit the ground running in pro ball, albeit in single A Stockton, hopefully he bumps up to high A. And I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility we see him bump to high A this week. If you're listening to this, he may have already got the bump. But I think that'd be a better test for him, because right now Kurtz isn't going to get challenged in single A. He's going to put up good numbers. Like it shouldn't change his stock at all for FIPDs, what he does this year, because he was already really good. I think I'd take him fourth in an FYPD, just behind the top three of Bazzano, Condon, and Weatherholt. And yep. I don't think he's that all far off from Weatherholt. Compare him to other first base profiles. Like, when we look at other top prospects that are first basemen, I know there's not a lot. So that's obviously something to think about. Looking at my board of like first basemen, I mean, like, Jack Cags is a first baseman, obviously. Xavier Isaac's a first baseman. Lazaro Montez has played some outfield, but he could land at first base. Kyle Manzardo, like, I don't know. I think that you could talk about him with any one of these guys, and yeah, I wouldn't argue against it. That's where I am on Nick Kurtz.
Yeah, no, it's for sure I have Isaac ahead of him. Maybe Basayo moves the first. Maybe Ramirez moves the first. After Isaac, it's him. It's Jack. It's, you know, like Manzardo, maybe some Bryce Eldridge, Ralphie Velasquez, CJ Cephas, guys like that. So, yeah, he's definitely right in that mix. And, yeah, for FYPD, I think tier one is Condon and Bazzano. You can flip-flop those two either way you want. I think that's tier one, though. And then someone's like, JJ's like, in a little mini tier of his own. He's not, I don't have him on the level of Condon or Bazzano. I think he's a little bit better than the next like several guys. So he's in a tier by himself. But yeah, then you get to the Kurtz, you get to the Cagliones, maybe I like Brad Montgomery a lot. And you know, maybe you throw Chase Burns up there if you're a big Chase Burns guy, kind of those types of players. But yeah, that's what I was alluding to with the Welsh last episode is, yeah, I think most people would agree that Cags 90th percentile outcome, true upside is higher, but is the gap between his 90th percentile outcome and Kurtz's 90th percentile outcome a bigger gap than like the floor for these two? And I don't think it is. I think there's a bigger gap in the floor than there is with the ceiling, obviously with the floor leading to Kurtz. So I think I'm flipping now. Like I had Jack ahead to start, and I think I flip-flop, and that has nothing to do. Again, like this is, we're talking 30 plate appearances. We're not shifting our rankings a ton because of 30 plate appearances, but just talking about the profile and the pros and the cons of each player, I'm like, man, and just talking about it, I'm like, I think I like Kurtz a little bit more. And Jack's hit a home run already. He's off to a hot start, but he's already hit his first home run. He's in high A right now, but yeah, I think Kurtz is a much safer profile. I think he gets to the show a good half season, maybe even a full season quicker than Jack does. If you value that proximity, I think he gets up sooner. So yeah, everything you could want from Nick Kurtz so far. And I don't know where he's at landing, like my final FYPD rankings, probably either 4, 5, or 6, one of those three spots. But yeah, definitely in that tier 2 or 3, whoever you want to put it, for sure. Someone that's been even more impressive, and that alludes to who the next player is, that was inadvertent, but Christian Moore, if you look at just the entire draft class so far. And nobody has more than 60, 65 plate appearances. He has the most total bases by an absolute country mile. Second most total bases, 10th rounder for the Padres, Jack Costello, who also sounds like a 1940s news anchor. But he has 27 total bases. Then first is Christian Moore at 43. Because he already has three doubles and six home runs and 59 plate appearances. Yeah, he slowed down a little bit of late. I think he had six of those home runs in his first seven games or eight games. I can't remember what exactly it was. But yeah, Christian Moore, offensive-minded first baseman. I think that was apparent in the draft. That's what everyone was talking about. He's an offensive-minded guy. Obviously, with the Angels, he's already been pushed up to double-A. He's one of the few guys. Is there any other guys in this draft class that are in double-A right now? It's hard to tell. But I don't. If there is, there's only maybe one or two more. So he's already been pushed pretty hard because of the Angels. But this is a really exciting profile from the second base spot. It'd be exciting anywhere, obviously, with the type of power he has, you know, a little bit of speed. He sneaks in, maybe he'll give you 5 to 10 steals. Then you're in good field to hit, but you put that at second base, and the profile gets even that much more exciting because obviously second base, not a huge offensive wonderland, so to speak, and it's been down this year especially. So, yeah, Christian Moore, maybe he is one that, you know, does get a decent bump here. I think, you know, ADP for him, if you had everyone's FYPD drafts right after the draft, probably would have been like 12, 13, maybe something like that. But I think if you have it now, I think he's a top 10. I think he's back at top 10 right now. It's given the offensive upside and the position and the proximity, too. That factors in. Yeah, you couldn't ask for a better start from Christian Moore, who, by the way, has 18 runs scored already as well, which is just absolutely insane. All of this in 59 plate appearances. What have been your early thoughts of Christian Moore, Chris?
Yeah, he's legit the only other player in AA right now that was drafted this year. Another Angel, David Mershon. So
what a surprise. An Angel, yeah. What a shock.
The Angels, if you haven't picked up yet, they don't use their high team at all. It's just, if you look at the high roster, it's not good. Like, literally anybody, basically they go from Inland Empire, single A, they jumped to Rocket City, double A, and then they go to the majors. They rarely utilize triple A. They rarely utilize high A if you're anything of importance in their system. So yeah, Moore is certainly, I think he's going to make his major league debut pretty soon, actually. So I wouldn't be shocked to see him up at the beginning of September. At this point, he has been otherworldly hot to start his pro career, and it's generated a ton of excitement. And of course, he hit six home runs in 13 games. He had in three doubles, 22 hits. Like, he's, as you mentioned, he scored more runs than times he struck out so far this year. And he's got a near 1300 OPS in a small sample. And this is coming off a year where he was one of the best hitters in college baseball. And honestly, he's shown that for 2 years now. He was a draft eligible sophomore this year out of Tennessee. So the biggest thing for me with Moore is, do those gains that he made in college this year stick? Because he actually had one of the largest jumps in contact rates of any player in college baseball this year. His overall contact rate in 2023 was 65% and the end zone was 75%, which, that's not going to play. Like, you come out of college with that and you're not getting drafted very high at all. And it's just not going to play in the majors. But this year, the overall contact rate jumped to 77% and the end zone to 83%. The question is, does that stick? And so far, he's making plenty of contact. Chase rates are good. He's, you know, run high OBPs. He's already shown he can get to plenty of power with a wood bat. We were talking about exit velocities with Kurtz, and Moore had a 96 mile an hour average EV with metal and 112 mile an hour ninth percentile. So at the top of, you know, the boards for both of those. And at the end of the day, it's translated with wood. He's hit one already, 113 with wood. So you love to see that and see that kind of power upside. But yeah, Christian Moore, I think you could argue for him as high as 5 in FYPD at this point, because you do have proximity and the talent level's there. There's no denying the talent level. And yeah, you could put him right up there with Caglione. I wouldn't argue it. Braden Montgomery, I have a pretty high too. Wouldn't argue that either. So I think for me, I think I could put him as high as 5 and be okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's definitely top 10 at this point in time. And I currently have him 8th right now, but that's a big cluster. Connor Griffin's in there as well. You mentioned I have Braden Montgomery in there, Jack, Nick Kurtz, Right, so I think he's definitely in that tier. We'll call that tier. Yeah, we'll call it tier three, with Weatherholt being kind of tier two. So yeah, that's a very, that tier is Kurtz, Caglione, Montgomery, Griffin, and Moore for me. Maybe Chase Burns. I'm still feeling out if I want to put him in that tier, though he is, would be the last one in that tier. But yeah, Christian Moore, absolutely. I mean, we got, like I mentioned, second base has been down recently. It surged a couple years ago. Now it's coming down. A lot of injuries this year, poor performances, and one of the better guys are getting a little bit older, Tuve, et cetera. So getting Christian Moore up probably next year, Travis Bazzana, probably not too long after that, to offensive-minded second baseman is going to be a really nice breath of fresh air. And, yeah, Christian Moore absolutely deserves to be a top 10 FIPD guy at this point in time. Next on the list here, we got J.J. Weatherholt of the Cardinals here. Off to, you know, maybe not quite as hot of a start, but does have a 429 OBP so far in 63 plate appearances, a couple of doubles, a home run, and 11 walks to only 5 strikeouts. Maybe not the flashiest start, but showing that he is definitely an advanced bat. He's in low A as well, probably isn't there for too much longer. And again, he's the guy that I think is like the unanimous number three in this draft class behind the big two of Bazzana and Condon. So what have been your early thoughts of J.J. Weatherholt?
Yeah, he's been really awesome. And it's no shock. He was one of the best hitters, best pure hitters coming into the draft. His biggest thing was just the fact that he's had so many lower body injuries, which right. is a little bit concerning. And it's like soft tissue kind of things, which does give some pause. And I think that there's reason to question about the durability long term. There's no questioning the bat. I can tell you that the bat is really good, and he's gotten off to an excellent start so far. He's putting the ball in play a ton. He's not, so no shock, he's not chasing at all. He's showing his normal good plate discipline skills. He's already hit a ball near 108, which is encouraging. Got a 90 mile an hour average EV and a 104 90th with wood. And again, it's a small sample in single A. But it is encouraging to see at the end of the day. This is just piggybacking off of what we thought he could do. He came into the draft, or came into this draft year, often stellar sophomore year, and then a really good Cape Cod League performance. But that hamstring bothered him. He had 36 games last year. But still, when he was healthy, I mean, it was an 84% contact rate. It was an end zone rate of 88%, chase rate of 14%. And again, he picks up spin really well. He can hit for power. He's shown that. The exit velocities were obviously up around the league, but 58% hard hit rate's really good. And a 95 mile an hour average and 108 90th. Like, those are going to play, which is huge. And I think with his contact skills, if he's healthy, he can steal bases, which is a big thing. Like, I think when you draft him, you're going to get potential speed as long as he's healthy. He didn't steal this year. And that's for good reason. He was coming off that hamstring injury. They didn't want him to steal. It was his draft year. No point in re-aggravating that. This is a hitter that could have gone 1-1. And I think that he stepped right into pro ball, and he's looked really good. So is he going to be a superstar? No, I don't believe that. But do I think he's going to be a really high floor hitter for a long time? Yeah, I'm really excited to see how he develops. Very advanced. I think he's probably going to high A pretty soon. Not sure. He may stick in the Florida State League all year, but I'd guess they bump him up to high and continue that development. But he's one that could be fast-tracked to the majors and be up pretty soon.
Yeah, and he's another one that could be over at second base eventually. Obviously, I think he was listed as a shortstop when he was drafted. And we'll see, as he played. Yeah, he's played all 13. Well, two games at DH, but 13 so far at shortstop. But obviously, Mason Wynn is there at shortstop now, so maybe they end up moving JJ over to second base long term. He definitely played a good amount there in college. I think actually he played more second base than shortstop in college. He actually he didn't even play much shortstop at all until this year. Like last year, he was primarily at second base, and before that, in 2022, he was mostly at third base. So he's moved around a little bit. Maybe he moves off second or third. We'll see. I'd probably say second if I had to guess. Which spot he'd move off to, but this could be another fantasy, friendly second base that maybe flirts with 2020 annually. I think his upside isn't quite on Condon and Bazan's level, but I don't think it's that far off. But obviously, as you mentioned, Chris, all the injuries he's had so far gives a little bit of pause. And maybe if he had a full healthy year this year, coming off the year he had last year, maybe he would be a guy that we're talking about firmly in that tier one with those two. A little bit more risk here, but definitely a fun all-around profile. Like you said, he's not going to be a guy that really blows you away in any one area, but it could be just really good, above average across the board. And yeah, again, it could be another fun second baseman to add into the mix here in the next year or two. Next one here, a little bit of a different hitter, but I got off to a really good start. I think he had 7 multi-hit games in his first 9 or something along those lines. And that's James Tibbs III with the San Francisco Giants, 13th overall pick. In his first 42 plate appearances, hasn't left the yard yet, but 17 hits, slashing .415, .429, .512. Only has 1 walk so far, a guy that's just going to put the ball in play and has a really good field of hits. But where's the power going to be at? It's almost, we know he's going to be kind of one of those high floor players, a safe hitter, and one of the more advanced hitters in this class, but lacked the pure upside of all the other names that were taken around him. So maybe he's a guy that falls a little bit in your FYPD just because he's not flashy, but Chris, what kind of player do you think we're looking at here with Tibbs? How much power do you think he gets to ultimately?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Like I've got questions about the ultimate power output, but I am pretty confident that he's going to hit. So it's like their first 2 picks were polar opposite in Dakota Jordan and Tibbs. So is Jordan going to hit enough to get to his power? I don't know, but Tibbs is certainly going to hit enough. And that is good because then he can allow himself to get to some powers because he's putting so many balls in play. He had a big power outbreak this year at Florida State. Hit 28 home runs, had 18 doubles and a triple. And again, like we take some of these numbers with a grain of salt, just given the run environment. But I do think Tibbs made some notable jumps this year in exit velocities, which is pretty encouraging to me. He's still stacked up at the top of the draft class as far as average EV and ninth percentile. I'll take my chances there, given that he's very patient. He doesn't chase. Like he was around a 20% chase rate for 2 straight seasons in college, which is encouraging. He was another one that made a big, like Christian Moore, that made a big jump in contact. He was 70% in 2023, jumped to 80% in 2024. So a rather big jump there, and we'll see if it can stick, but I'm pretty hopeful that, the contact skills will remain. Now, he's had 17 hits in 9 games so far. Quite a few multi-hit. I think, I don't have the numbers in front of me. It's either 6 or 7 multi-hit games so far, which is really encouraging. He's walked once, which is weird to see considering just how he was in college, walking more often than he struck out. But I do think that it's a case where he's in single A, like he's going to be more aggressive. It's another just weak assignment where we know he's way better than the competition. But at the end of the day, if Tibbs gets to, if he's 18 to 20 home run bat, it's going to play given the fact that the contact skills are so good. He did steal 8 bases at Florida State. I don't think he's going to be a stolen base threat. So I wouldn't really factor that in as someone that you think is going to give you some stolen bases. I don't really see that, but I do think that he's going to give you enough power. He's going to get on base a lot. And he's going to hit for average. Tibbs' start to his pro career has been really good so far. And I think it's just everything you could ask for.
Yeah, definitely one of the higher floor guys in this draft. Probably if you were ranking simply on highest floor, probably be top 10. And he's even, I think you guys should be close to top 10 in FYPD regardless. I currently have him 15th, in tier 4 or so of my rankings. So, could he push higher? Sure. But right above him, you got more of some of the tools of the year, shortstops, Gillen, Bryce Rayner, Seaver King, Hagen Smith is up in there, Vance Honeycutt, who I know I'm higher on the most. But he's kind of in a similar range to Cam Smith and a little bit ahead of the outfielders like Slade Caldwell, Ryan Waldschmidt. I think 13 to 17 range is pretty fair for him, depending on if you're someone that chases more upside in your FYPD, or if you want to see a safe bat that's probably going to move fairly quickly. I think Tibbs is a pretty solid player as well. And maybe he's never going to be a starting caliber fantasy outfielder or wherever he ends up, but could he be maybe more of a outfield four, outfield five, something like that? Gives you, you know, good average, maybe, you know, 15, 20 home runs. Maybe he's like a poor man's Brian Reynolds or something like that. That could be an outcome for him. But next on the list here, we got Kalen Culpepper, who's off to a pretty solid start to his career. That's only 8 games down there in low A, but slashing 303, 378, 576, 3 doubles, 2 home runs, a steal, 3 walks to 2 strikeouts. And there are some that I've seen, whether it be on a live stream or some of the bigger sites or just someone on Twitter, one of our many, you know, colleagues on Twitter that are really big on Kalen Culpepper. And I see he had a pretty good last 2 years at Kansas State, and his actually slash line was almost a mirror of itself those last 2 years: 325, 423, 576 in 2023, and then 328, 419, 574 this spring in 2024 with 11 home runs and 17 steals. He's got, I have him ranked right now. Let's see, what do I have him ranked? I have him ranked 25th in my FYPD right now, but I'm maybe feeling a little too low on Culpepper there at 25. But what are your thoughts there on him, Chris? And then the one that doesn't have anything that really stands out in the profile, but it's pretty good across the board.
I think that with Culpepper, I'm not the highest on him. I think I'm going to probably end up missing out on a lot of FYPDs just given the hype that I see around him. He just, in my opinion, it's sure, it's a good contact profile. Like, he's shown some really good things in college, but it's just a boring fantasy profile. He had 11 home runs in college this season, stole 17 bases. It was a 14% K rate, 12% walk rate, but the EVs were well below average in comparison to his colleagues in this year's draft. And he does, how he benefits, I will say, he benefits from the standpoint of that he gets to the angles often. So it's like he hits it in the sweet spot quite often, which helps. It's honestly like well below average EVs for his age. And I'm not sure how that's going to translate with Wood. So far, it really hasn't. It's just a max of 103.5 so far. And yeah, it's like, I don't love that. He was really aggressive against spin last year and had a rather high chase rate against breaking balls. So that's another concern. The concern of him being able to hit velocity. So like against 94 plus last year, it was a 607 expected OPS. So that's not great. The hard hit rate against off speed, pretty poor. His hard hit rate against 94 mile an hour plus, not good. He doesn't pull the ball. All that to say, like, everything I've read and know about Culpepper is that he's a really hard worker, that he is going to put in the work to get better every day. But right now, I look at this profile and it's, to me, just like, okay, I don't really see the fantasy intrigue. Like, I'm just not like drafting this kind of profile in FYPD in the range that he goes. I'm going to take an upside shot on a prep armor, a high upside prep bat. I just don't think that this is the kind of fantasy profile you really want, in my opinion. Sure, it's been a really high contact. Like, you love to see that. But there's just some flaws in the profile, in my opinion, that kind of set him back for me from a fantasy perspective. So I'm just not going all in. But if you want to, like, it's understandable. Like, he's a good player and there's been a lot of buzz out there, but I think there's a lot of things that are working against him from a fantasy perspective as well.
Yeah, and where I think he's going or probably going to go in FYPDs, I'd rather, yeah, there's a lot of upside guys there. I think I honestly have no idea where PJ Morlando is going to go in FYPDs, so maybe he's not the best example. I think maybe Tyson Lewis will be in a similar FYPD ADP rate, and maybe Caleb Bonimer, Kellen Lindsey, Griffin Burkholder, maybe a Braylon Payne, guys like that. I might take a shot at one of those guys. Again, I think Culpepper's fine. I think he's probably be a guy that's probably in the 20, maybe 6 in the high teens, probably low 20s guy for FYPD. But yeah, there's just nothing that really stands out there for me. Maybe he's a 12, 15 home run guy, 20 plus deals. He's going to provide some value for sure. But yeah, there's a lot more hype. Yeah, I kind of just going to similar to what you were saying. There's a lot more hype than intrigue for me personally. So yeah, I'm probably not going to have, I probably will have zero shares of Culpepper, and that's not anything against him, just how the board will probably fall. But before we go over to three up, three down, let's just look at the big two so far with Travis Pastrana and Charlie Condon. You know, Condon off to a little bit of a slow start. Does have his first career home run. He's in high A right now, but striking out 38.5% of the time. Only a 194, 256, 333 slash line. And Pastrana, a bit better, 256, 418, 442. Also striking out a little bit too much, 30.9%, but also has 18.2% walk rate with five doubles, a home run, and three steals so far. So what have been your early returns here, early thoughts on Pastrana and Condon?
Yeah, I think that the ups and downs of CAGs are not super shocking to me, just given the volatility in the profile, the high chase. Like, he's pretty aggressive, and I feel like he's one that's going to, especially like this kind of profile, where he's going to step in and he's going to be guns a-blazing, like where he's going to try to light the world on fire. That's just his profile. And so I'm not shocked to see some struggles with strikeouts to this point. He's going to have to adjust. He's made adjustments in his college career. So yeah, I'm not ruling out that he makes another adjustment and can adjust to high pitching and double A pitching. So yeah, I think that he's going to be fine. I think that at the end of the day, the power upside's tremendous with CAGs. Pastrana's got such a, feels like a safe floor. We talk about the Nick Kurtz floor, and I think it's right there with Pastrana too. I think that they'll both be fine. I'm not particularly worried about either start. Like, they're not going to really affect anything that I'm looking at. Pastrana's been, he's 860 OPS and high A so far, which is good. Five doubles, a home run. So like, Pastrana's start's been good. Condon's start has been up and down. Pastrana has struck out a little bit more than I thought. He's had 17 strikeouts so far and 55 plate appearances, just over a 30% K rate. Condon's at a 38.5% K rate. CAGs is right at 30. So at the end of the day, those guys are uber talented. Talent's going to win out. They're going to adjust and be fine. Yeah, I'm not particularly worried about any of them at this point, and I'm still in. I'm not going to change my rankings based on how they do. Yeah, that's all I have to say. The talent's there. It's all going to work out, certainly in on both.
Yeah, and Jack just hit his second home run earlier today, which I missed earlier when I was reading off the stats. And it was a nice moonshot. So showing off that power so far, second home run. All right, let's move over to three up, three down with hitters this week, starting with Theron Lorenzo from the Detroit Tigers here. It was acquired at the trade deadline from the Los Angeles Dodgers, and was kind of having a pretty down season for his standards, at least compared to previous years. But we'll get, like, over the last 10 days, he's got four home runs and four doubles, 483, 595, 1,034 slash line, more walks than strikeouts as well, 8-6 there. And you know, getting back to the player that we saw coming into this year. We knew power, big time power, potentially like 30 home run bat, but obviously he's a catcher. So is he playing? I forget the 30. Obviously, it's a big power bat that can walk a ton and get on base. And even this year, even look at his 74 games with the Dodgers high A affiliate in Great Lakes before the trade, he's only hitting 220, but still had a 344 OBP because he had 49 walks in 314 plate appearances. And yeah, the K rate was a little high, but not terrible. It was around like 26% or so. And then so far in 13 games since the trade, 14 walks to 11 strikeouts, 372, 526, 767 slash line. Last year had 24 home runs in 94 games with a 400 OBP on the nose. So again, getting back to the high power, high OBP guy that we saw. And I think the overall season line still being lackluster. So they only hit 241 overall this year, 414 slug. So I think you can use that. Maybe trade the lines pass, but maybe if it hasn't, maybe get an offer out there soon. Or even if you have to wait till the offseason, I think he's a solid buy low right now. And you know, I think he's got a clear path to playing time here with in the Detroit system. than he did in Dodger system. Maybe catcher, some first base. He's played both this year, about 2/3 to 1/3 split to catcher and first base. Either one of those is a possible outcome. And but he's a guy that's giving you a big OBP and potential 30 plus home runs. That's still got plenty of value. And he's still only 20 years old, too. Still very young. So, yeah, I think Lorenzo is a pretty solid buy low right now.
Yeah, I think so, too. The bat's really good. And, yeah, he's had his struggles, but he's young. He's not behind the dish. He's not the best. And I think that he's really been working to improve there. And that certainly affects the bat of players when they are putting a focus on catching, and especially when that's been a struggle at times. He's caught pretty much every game. He played some first in LA, but he's not played first with Detroit so far. He's caught 9 games and he's DH 4. They seem pretty dedicated to putting him at catcher and hoping that it works. But yeah, he's been really good since the trade. He's had 4 home runs. He had a multi-home run game, which is encouraging. He is striking out a lot less, so that's been fun to see too. Like, he seems to be getting comfortable and getting his groove, which I like to see. And now he's riding a 5-game hit streak, which is really good too. If he had one today, I have not seen what he did today, but if he had a hit on Sunday, I'd make it 6. He's had 2 4-hit games since the move over to Detroit. I think that from a pure bat standpoint, like, I think this could be a top 100 fantasy guy, like, just from the bat. The raw power's through the roof, and there's a good enough feel to hit here with really good OBP skills where I think it's going to play. And if he moves to first, yeah, there's a little more pressure on the bat. But at the end of the day, like, we're talking about the hitter that hit 24 home runs last year as a 19-year-old in just 418 plate appearances with some really big exit velocities. And this year, the power has not been there as much. But I do think it could come back around. And this is a bat that I think that you like to bet on. It's a good buy low at this point. Maybe the window's closing, but yeah, I still like Lorenzo a lot. And it's really encouraging to see the progression that he's made.
Yeah, he did have a hit today. So that I think puts him up to a 6-game hitting streak now. Yeah, I think both in agreement here. Definitely buy low on Lorenzo if possible. The first down here, who I think was probably up a couple of weeks ago, Davison De Los Santos. Over the last 10 games, he had 3 home runs in his first 7 games after being traded over to the Miami organization, but has a little bit of a strikeout problem going on right now. He did have 3 hits and a home run today, obviously perfect timing, but his last 10 games entering today had 21 strikeouts in 43 plate appearances, so right under 50% K. And yet it's only 10 games, and he didn't have a big strikeout rate coming into this last little 10-game stretch, but I think this shows the volatility, the ups and downs, just the inconsistency that is Davison De Los Santos. And yeah, the power, when he gets on a bender, he can be really fun to watch. Chris and I, we've seen him in a home run derby. We've seen him taking batting practice out in the AFL. The power is real. The power is legit. The power is downright freaking sexy. But at the same time, there is this downside that we're seeing with him where it can go south just as good as it when he's going good. It can go just as bad on the other end of the spectrum. He's one where the rankings on him are all over the place. I've seen him in some top 25s. People that are still skeptical have him outside the top 100. I have him right now back in top 100. I mean, I see the powers there. He could be 35 home runs, but is that with a 230 average or something like that, with in a lower OBP as well, because he doesn't walk a whole lot? Over the last 10 games, he has, let's see, 2 walks in the last 10 games. I've never been a high OBP guy, so is he like 230 average, 290 OBP or something like that with all those home runs? That's great and all, but I don't know, it's just such a volatile profile. Fun, but also we see the downside here. What are you making right now of Davison? Obviously, maybe he's up later this year. If he gets hot again, you can see that. But just a really hard-to-value profile.
If anybody knows my work, you know that I'm probably lower than about anybody on Davison, because I just think there's so many questions about how it can work. It's a hard profile to peg, and you really have to be threading a needle for this to work at the major league level. So I'm looking at Davison, and yeah, power upside's tremendous. he's quite young, which is, that's obviously an encouragement too, that he's up his, the levels that he is and how young he is. But he, the contact skills just aren't great. I mean, it's 65% contact rate now in AAA. Yeah, the EVs are through the roof. 108.5 ninth percentile is a lot of fun. 91.5 average EV. Love to see that. Chase rate, way too high for my liking. 42% in AAA. It was higher in AA. Like, I don't love that by any means. I also look at the launch angles, and it's a lot of ground balls too, which is a little bit concerning to me. So, yeah, I think what you're going to get with Davison De Los Santos is like a lot of ups and downs. I think he's going to have some really good seasons. I also think he's going to have some really down seasons too. He's going to be a major league bat. There's no denying that. He's just turned 21. He's been AAA the majority of the year. So, yes, he's going to be a major league bat. He's going to get to a lot of power. But at the end of the day, how much? What's the profile look like? I think he could have some Franmil Reyes-esque seasons where Franmil Reyes had a couple really good runs, but he also had some true downfalls. Michael Franco, not Garcia, totally different profile. Michael Franco is the name I was looking for.
That I'm kind of spit out my drink on that one.
Michael Franco was the one I'm looking for here. That's one that I can see the kind of outcomes, but at the end of the day, like, it's a tough needle to thread here. Do I think Davison has some 30 home run seasons in the majors? Yeah. But do I think it comes with like a 220 average and probably pretty low OBPs? Yeah, I do. It's going to be interesting to see how it pans out for sure.
Yeah, it's just, it boils down to what you think about that profile. Are you fine with getting the big power and probably, well, it's Miami, so maybe he doesn't drive in a lot of runs, but usually 35 home runs brings some additional RBIs and whatnot. But are you okay with the downfall of an average and OBP that are probably going to hurt you, especially the OBP, especially? So I don't know. I think this is probably always to be someone that likes him more than me in my leagues. Like, I don't have any shares right now. Probably won't have any shares because I think the perceived value is higher than where I have. I think perceived value is probably top 50, 60, 70-ish. And I said I have him more than 100 right now. Chris, I might have missed it. Where do you have him in your rankings? I'm sure it's lower than 100. Is he even like top 150 for you?
Yeah, he's top 150. I got him at 138.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. Next up here, we're going out to the NL West. Bryce Eldridge, big old Bryce Eldridge, 6'7". Got that power hitter's frame. Still only 19 years old. First round pick in last year's draft out of high school in Virginia. And you know, he's had a pretty solid year throughout, but really turning it on lately. We're starting with a two-hit game with a home run on the 31st of July. Since then, in his last, this would be what, 15 games, he's got 10 extra base hits, 4 doubles, a triple, 5 home runs, also has 15 walks to 12 strikeouts, and even 2 steals, and a .386 .500 .754 slash line. Eldridge just looks the part of a middle-of-the-order masher. Obviously, the big frame. And just, it, maybe he's a little bit on the slight side, 223, but definitely strong, you know, especially in the lower half as well. And I think he's a better hitter than people give him credit for. Yeah, is he going to hit 300? No. But I don't think he's going to be one of these low-average, power-only mashers. I don't think he's going to be a Davison. I think the power is pretty close long-term. You know, I think if you give them 600 plate appearances down the road, maybe they hit pretty similar home run totals. But I think Eldridge is going to bring an average that's probably 20, 30, or maybe even more points higher. And he's showing that right now. And like, he walks, he gets on base at a much higher clip, doesn't strike out as much. Again, walks at a much higher clip than Davison does. So, yeah, I think Eldridge is definitely put himself in that top 50 discussion right now, just given the power upside and I'm a better field to hit than someone like a Davison's. Yeah, we're really excited to see what he can do rest of this year and then into 2025.
Yeah, so Eldridge is the polar opposite where he's very patient. It's a sub 20% chase rate, which is obviously pretty notable. Like, he doesn't he's got the massive EVs, obviously, too. So you look at this profile, and he's been successful, like, early on in his career, and it's continued to, and I know, like, he's actually not a lot much younger than Davison.
Yeah.
But he'll be 20. He was older for last year's draft, but just a wiry 6'7" frame. Like, it looks like he might play basketball. But this guy just hits, and he hits some more. He's been really good in high A this year. The adjustment's been excellent. He's got a 440 OBP. He's got 6 home runs. Like, the EVs are incredibly high with Bryce Eldridge. So I think that when you look at the kind of profile, like the power profile, at least, that I want to bet on, this is it. Like, somebody that can get on base and hit for power. His frame is, you know, more than ideal. He's a good athlete. Yeah, I'm betting on Bryce Eldridge. Like, he's just continuing to push up for me. And I think, like, we're looking at him in the range now where he's making an argument for fantasy to be like a top 30 type guy, like maybe even higher. I think that what he's done has been, you know, absolutely incredible to see. And I'm very high on Bryce Eldridge.
Yeah. And if I recall correctly, I think he had an ADP in Welsh's mocks a few weeks ago. I think it was like top 40 or so. I think it was like 38, 39, something like that. So yeah, the perceived value and the price tag is definitely rising here. And maybe he's a top 25 guy by the end of the season. I think that's definitely possible. Second down here, what a lot of corner infielders today. CJ Kafis with the Cleveland Guardians. He had a really 4 good months start the year. He had 352 in April, 333 in May, 329 in June. And even last month in July, 288 with a 407 OBP. But so far here in August, not so good. In 11 games, 46 plate appearances. Only has 6 hits so far, 143, 217, 191 slash line with 3 walks and 15 strikeouts. So striking out a lot more than he had in the first 4 months of the season. And he was a guy that people are looking at. The approach was really solid, field of hits. Power was middle of the road. But he's a guy that if he's not hitting for, you know, a higher average, high getting on base at a high clip, he's pretty mediocre for fantasy because he's probably more of a, what do you think the power is, Chris? Like a 15 homer guy, so kind of something in that range. So if he's not hitting 280, 290 with a upper 300s OBP, if he's only hitting like 260, 270, yeah, it'll play, but it's more kind of deep league waiver wire guy as opposed to someone you're looking to draft or be a staple of your team throughout the season. And I'm not saying he can't be that just because of the last week and a half or 2 weeks or so, whatever it's been, but a profile that hinges on him being, again, a really high average guy.
Yeah, no, I think so. Like, it's an interesting profile where he looks like he is going to hit for a ton of average, and he has, but the contact rates dipped pretty hard in double A. It was 77% in high A, dropped to 68% so far in double A, which is interesting. It's a profile where he does lift the ball a lot and he pulls the ball a lot. So that's where he gets to a lot of his power. Doesn't hit the ball overly hard, like the EVs aren't super high or anything, but like Kafis is making it happen because he's lifting, he's pulling, like something that's, we'll call it like the Isak Paredes skill, like where he's perfected that. It's been interesting to see. Kafis has had some pretty down stretches since the calendar turnover to August. Maybe it's the fatigue of a long season. I don't really know, but the strikeout rate has jumped pretty significantly this month. The contact rate, as I mentioned, has fallen pretty hard in double A. And in the month of August, he's hitting 143. It's a small sample, so we're not going to put a lot of stock into that. But it is interesting to see. Just 15 strikeouts to 3 walks. Not ideal by any means. But at the end of the day, like, I like Kafis. I think he's going to be solid. OBP skills, average, strikeouts. Yeah, I think the strikeouts do go down, is what I was looking to say there. They have ballooned in double A. But yeah, it's an interesting skill set. But I do think there's a lot of pressure on that bat, given that he's a first baseman. And at the end of the day, like, you know, how much power is he going to provide you? Because he's not going to give you steals. So he's going to have to really hit. And so that's the concern here.
Yeah, like his best case scenario, like Lyle Overbay. I hate that I use Overbay for every decent, minimal or lackluster power first baseman, but it fits. So his upside is still, even best case scenario, 95th percentile outcome, still on a lower end of a lot of the first base prospects, and getting top 100 or close to it for rankings. But Yeah, he needs that average to be high because I really don't see him being more than like a 15 homer guy. You know, he's a guy that I did bump up in my rankings, but someone I'm probably, again, this lower than most on. So I'm not going to have, I don't have any shares right now and probably won't have any shares anytime soon. The last up here, our third up is Gabriel Rincones with the Philadelphia Phillies, outfielder, third round pick back in 2022 out of Florida Atlantic University. He's been limited to only, 45 games so far this year. He had a torn thumb ligament earlier in the year, which limited him, but he has been, talking about a fantasy-friendly stat line here, he's been very exciting in his 45 games, kind of make up for lost time. He scored, I know it's run score, we don't look at it for minor leaguers, but he scored 34 runs in 45 games. He's on base, 371 clip, 521 slug, 272 average, 12 doubles, 10 home runs, and 17 steals. And he's coming off a pretty solid year last year. Only hit 248, but 351 OBP, 31 doubles, 15 home runs, 32 steals, only caught six times. Has a success rate above 80% on the bases, 49 steals in 165 career minor league games, and only been caught 10 times. You look at it, he's played a little over a full year, and he's put up some pretty solid counting stats so far. 165 games, 43 doubles, 25 home runs, and 49 steals, 84 walks as well. So there's definitely some fun tools here in the profile. He is a little older. He's 23, turned 23 before the season, but maybe that 23 turns some people off. But I think there's definitely, again, a fantasy-friendly profile here and someone that, because he missed so much time earlier in the year, I think that perceived value has been kept pretty much in check. So I think he's a solid value target right now, Chris.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree here. It's, you look at this profile and it's not like super flashy, but right. I will say he's one of the more impressive players I saw in the AFL last year. Like, I walked away and I was like, okay, I really believe there's something here with Gabriel Rincones. And I still believe that. He missed a lot of time this year. He's got 161 plate appearances, but he's been really good. He's got pop. He's got speed. The hit tool has looked much better. He's striking out, but he's making a decent amount of contact, which I think is encouraging. So I look at this profile, and I think it is a pretty good buy at this point, where I think that he's in a good system for development. He gets on base. He does a lot of things well, and you look at the performance compared to his league, 173 WRC plus for Gabriel Rincones Jr., and that's really impressive, near 1,000. The skill set, look at it. It's a lot of line drives. It's a lot of fly balls. He's not hitting the ball on the ground often at all, which I love to see. He doesn't pull it as often as I want, but he has a good all-fields approach, which may limit his power output. But also, I will say he's not the fastest runner, but I'll say that his instincts were really good. Like, when we saw him stealing bases last year in the AFL, it was just really good reads on the pitchers, really good jumps. And all he's not super fast on a clock time. Like, you're going to look and see probably like below average speed on the clock. Like, I think he can still steal some bases. So I think that there's no reason to believe that he can't be like a 20 home run, 15 stolen base type with good OBP skills. I'll absolutely take that. So I think he is, like you said, a really good value target right now for leagues, and I take my shots and see. I'm pretty interested in this profile.
Yeah, that's a good point with the stolen bases, because I think people look at, all right, look at the speed, and obviously that's a huge part of it, but it's really a three-part pie or puzzle here when it comes to stolen base totals. Obviously, speed is one of them. Willingness to run, you can loop team context into that as well, and this smarts on the bases is the third piece of it. And while he might not be as you mentioned, the fastest guy in the world, he's not slow, but maybe he's a fringe average runner. But he's got the other two. He's shown that he wants to run. They're letting him run, and he's doing it efficiently. Even, I look back, it wasn't a huge number, but even Albert Pujols stole 16 bags one year in the middle of his career. Like, you can steal bags and not have, you don't need a 93rd percentile or better sprint speed or whatever. I think people look at that, and obviously, yeah, it's a big part of it, but there's definitely other things that go into stealing bags, and Rincones definitely checks off those boxes for sure. And yeah, I think he's a guy that I have him around like 150 right now, but I think you can get him for cheap, or even, heck, depending on how deep your league is, maybe he's sitting there on your waiver wire, and I think he'd be a pretty solid addition. All right, last down here to close out the show, And this one hurts a little bit because this is a guy I've been very high on, you know, for the last 12, 13 months or so since last year's draft. And that's Brock Wilken with the Milwaukee Brewers. It does have 14 home runs this year in 391 plate appearances. And, you know, walking on a decent clip, K rate's not terribly high, but he's already hitting 217 with a 322 OBP and a 381 slash line this year. And it's just been outside of a little bit of a hot stretch back in, I want to say it was like maybe June or so, shortly after he got back. It's been pretty down for the most part. You look at like the last 10 days here, 139, 279, 139. So no extra base hits over his last 43 play appearances and is striking out at a 42% clip. So the K rate is, well, on the season, it's around 26%. It's definitely gone up lately. I still like Wilken a good bit. I still think the power is there. I don't think the gains he made this last year at Wake Forest were completely fluky in terms of more walks, less strikeouts, more contact. I think there's still a really impactful fantasy third baseman here. I'm also giving him a little bit, not a full pass, but maybe you give him a little bit of a pass because he had a broken, I forget what exactly which bone it was, but basically a broken face earlier in the year, taking the fastball off the face. So you got to imagine that's a little factor again. Maybe it's psychological, mental, or whatever. So I'm giving him a little bit of a pass for that, so I'm not like going to drop him terribly far down my rankings, but it has been a pretty rough year, and we're now, what, like 3-4 months and removed from that. That was an early season issues. Yeah, it's definitely been rough for Brock Wilken, but I'd look to buy low. I think the impactful bat is still there. Hopefully, maybe this year, chalk up to a lost year, so to speak, and then next year, hopefully, fully healthy, a year removed from that injury, you can get back on track. So I would look to buy low. Chris, are you in that same camp, or do you have some additional concerns here with Brock Wilken?
No, I still like Wilken a lot, actually. I think that, as you mentioned, there's reasons that he struggled. I agree with you. He made some good gains at Wake Forest last year. The contact skills have actually been pretty solid this year, so it's not like, that's not a major question mark for me. It's like, I'm not going to say they're good contact. They're passable. They're average contact rates. And for a profile like this, like, it's a play. He's immense raw power. I think you can argue like he's got as much power as almost anybody in the minor leagues, like that kind of power upside. And when you're making like average contact rates for your league and age, like, that'll play. And it's not all been bad. He's been down. Like we mentioned Kafis in August. Wilken's been pretty horrific in August. If you look at it, and it's concerning that he's hitting 115 this month and he struck out 25 times, a 41% strikeout rate this month. It's a 115 slug. It's really bad. 361 OPS. But he's also had his ups too. Like there's been the moments where it's okay, I can see it. And he had an 874 OPS in July where that obviously looked really good too. And he didn't strike out. He walked as much as he struck out in July. And he had 6 home runs and 4 doubles in 23 games. Yeah, it's been a roller coaster of a season for him. But I think that Wilken's still someone that I want to invest in. And I certainly think like, I would buy the dip here. Like of any of the three downs we talked about, of like Davison De Los Santos, CJ Kafis, or Brock Wilken, like I'm buying Brock Wilken. So I'm certainly in here.
Yeah, he's definitely the one. Like, yeah, out of these three, that if I had to pick one to buy low on, absolutely. I'd go Wilken one. I don't have any strong opinions either way. And Davison and CJ is so different. So maybe I'd say Davis said this because I think there's, you know, obviously the more upside there. So I'd go him. Yeah, and in terms of the three ups, you know, I'm definitely very much in on Eldridge, pretty in on Lorenzo. And I think Rincon is a sneaky. So three pretty good targets there and a great buy low here with Brock Wilken. But that is going to wrap us up. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. And we'll be back with you again on Thursday. But until then, everyone take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. all that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.